Wisdom, the final frontier to true knowledge. Welcome to Wisdom Trek, where our mission is to create a legacy of wisdom, to seek out discernment and insights, to boldly grow where few have chosen to grow before. Hello, my friend. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, your captain on our journey to increase wisdom and create a living legacy. Thank you for joining us today as we explore wisdom on our second millennium of podcast. This is day 1311 of our trek, and it is Worldview Wednesday. Creating a biblical worldview is important in order to have a proper perspective on today's current events. To establish a biblical worldview, it is required that we have a proper understanding of God and His Word. Our focus for the next several months on Worldview Wednesday is mastering the Bible through a series of brief insights. These insights are extracted from a book of the same title from one of today's most prominent Hebrew scholars, Dr. Michael S. Heiser. This book is a collection of insights designed to help you to understand the Bible better. When we let the Bible be what it is, we can understand it as the original readers did and as the original writers intended. Each week, we will explore two additional insights. Today is Mastering the Bible, Theophany, and Archaeology. So insight number 33 is, God was present in human form in the Old Testament. The time of Jesus wasn't the first time in the Bible that God appeared on earth as man. There are several places in the Old Testament where God comes in human form, even to the point of embodiment. In fact, these appearances become the reference points for the New Testament writers to talk about Jesus. For example, in several passages, the word of the Lord appears to prophetic figures like Abraham in Genesis chapter 15 verses 1 and 4, to Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 3 verses 1, 7, and 21, and to Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 1 verses 2, 4, and 11. In these instances, the word of the Lord was visible. In other words, the reference is not just to a voice inside the head. In Jeremiah's case, the word of the Lord, identified as God Himself in the passage, reaches out His hand and touches the prophet, as we read in Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 9. Then the Lord reached out and touched my mouth and said, "Look, I have put my words in your mouth." These passages and others like them are where the Apostle John gives his idea that Jesus was the Word, who was God, the Word made flesh. Let me read John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3 and verse 14. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through Him, and nothing was created except through Him. So the Word became human and made His home among us, and He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. And we have seen His glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. Further evidence for God in human form in the Old Testament is the angel of the Lord. In Exodus chapter 23, verses 20 and 21, God tells Moses, "See, I am sending an angel before you to protect you on your journey and to lead you safely to the place that I have prepared for you. Pay close attention to him and obey his instructions. Do not rebel against him, for he is my representative, and he will not forgive your rebellion." The word translated angel in the Old Testament means messenger, and so the angel of the Lord is a divine being sent out to do a particular task. The key thing to notice in Exodus chapter 23 is that this particular angel has the representation of God in him. Other passages make it clear that this is another way to refer to God Himself. For example, the angel with God's name in him was assigned by God to lead the Israelites to the Promised Land. Judges chapter 2 verses 1 through 3 tells us that the angel accomplishes that task. But in Deuteronomy chapter 4 verses 37 and 38, we read that God took Israel out of Egypt and defeated her enemies to conquer the land through God's presence. In other words, God's presence was in the angel. Interestingly enough, in the New Testament, Jude 5 shows Jesus delivering the Israelites from Egypt and defeating their enemies. The phrase, "the angel of the Lord," appears nearly 80 times in the Bible. Most of these occurrences were in bodily form, the pre-incarnate Christ. Genesis chapter 48 verses 15 and 16 makes it explicit. When Jacob blesses Joseph's children, he prayed, "Then he blessed Joseph and said, May the God before whom my grandfather Abraham and my father Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this very day, the angel who has redeemed me from all harm, may he bless these boys. May they preserve my name and the names of Abraham and Isaac, and may their descendants multiply greatly throughout the earth. The text does not read, may they bless the boys, but may he bless the boys. The wording treats God and the angel as one. There are many other passages that show God in human form before Jesus. God wasn't born of a woman in these passages, but they prepared people for that event. So let's now move on to insight number 34. Archaeology can validate, but not prove the Bible. Many Bible students are fascinated by archaeology. There is a certain mystique about recovering something hidden from human eyes for thousands of years. Archaeological discoveries can tell us a lot about the past. Artifacts can tell us about something how people lived. Some of these texts tell us what they thought or saw. Because archaeology provides a window into the past, it is important for understanding the Bible. Unfortunately, what archaeology can do for the Bible is often overstated. Popular apologetic books talk a lot about how archaeology proves the Bible, but that is a bit misleading. While it is true that names of biblical characters have been found on tablets and inscriptions, archaeology has never produced a text or artifact that precisely points to the biblical character before the time of David. For example, finding Jacob inscribed somewhere isn't necessarily a reference to the biblical character. A lot of people at that time could have borne that name. Does that mean that there are no archaeological evidence for Bible characters like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, Gideon, Samson, and Samuel? Well, the answer is, yes, there is none. But the issue needs to be framed differently. If we ask, does that mean that there are no archaeological evidence for the events, historical circumstances, lifestyle portrayals, and other religious beliefs of the biblical characters? The answer would be a polar opposite. There are archaeological discoveries for that. Archaeology has produced a lot of evidence that demonstrates the details of biblical stories are quite plausible, such as marriage customs and treaty structures. It has also produced artifacts that show biblical detail about history was correct, even though correlating proof was lacking for many years, such as Belshazzar's rule over Babylon. These achievements are important in defending biblical validity. Something archaeology can never do, though, is to prove theological statements of the Bible. You can't dig up God. Even if archaeologists find the walls of biblical Jericho toppled down and burned, and some would say that they have, Jericho's ruins cannot prove that God knocked them down. That is a theological assertion. Since God's existence and power is beyond the realm of science, they are also beyond the realm of archaeology. The coherence of the Bible truth's claims need to be defended on other grounds, such as sound logic. Archaeology is a valuable tool in validating the circumstances of biblical events, but it is dangerous, however, to exaggerate its contribution. Claims that overstate evidence are bound to be overturned. Theological truth should not be put in jeopardy by careless apologetics. And that will conclude our lesson for another two insights from Dr. Heiser's book, Mastering the Bible. Next Worldview Wednesday, we will continue with two additional insights. I believe that you'll find each Worldview Wednesday an interesting topic to consider as we build our biblical worldview. Tomorrow we will continue with our 3-minute humor nugget that will provide you with a bit of cheer, which will help you to lighten up and live a rich and satisfying life. So I encourage your friends and family to join us and to come along with us tomorrow for another day of Wisdom Trek, creating a legacy. If you'd like to listen to any of the past 1,310 treks or read the Wisdom Journals, they are all available at wisdom-trek.com. And I encourage you to subscribe to Wisdom Trek on your favorite podcast player so that each day's trek will be downloaded to you automatically. And thank you so much for allowing me to be your guide, your mentor, but most importantly, I am your friend as I serve you through the Wisdom Trek podcast and journal each day. And as we take this trek of life together, let us always live abundantly, love unconditionally, listen intentionally, learn continuously, lend to others generously, lead with integrity, then leave a living legacy each day. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, reminding you to keep moving forward, enjoy your journey, and then create a great day every day. See you tomorrow.